What does it take to be successful as a creative entrepreneur? Let's find out with today's guest, Nick Onken. Welcome to another episode of Question Everything, where we connect young leaders with experts in entrepreneurship, publishing, and design. I'm your host, Carly Sotis, and today I'm speaking with Nick Onken. Nick is a photographer, designer, and the host of Shop Talk Radio, where he interviews and shares insights from creative entrepreneurs. Nick has worked with companies including Nike and Reebok, and magazines like 17 and Cosmopolitan. Nick is also the photographer for Pencils of Promise, which is an organization that establishes schools and education programs for students in developing communities around the world. In today's episode, Nick talks about how his design education eventually led him to a career in photography and reflects on some of the challenges he faced when he was first starting his freelance career. He talks about the importance of patience and practice when developing your craft and shares tips for staying motivated when you're doubting yourself or your work. Nick also shares some of the lessons he's learned from traveling and working with organizations around the world and discusses how being resourceful and creative will allow you to create the opportunities you want and live a purposeful life. So thank you so much for being with us today, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
Now, last week when I emailed you and asked you to be on the show, you graciously said, I'd love to, I think I should be in the city that week, but can we figure out a time closer to the date? And I'm wondering, what's it like to always be traveling and never know where you're going to be the next week?
I love it, actually. It's kind of one of those things where I thrive off of it. I think partially because I love new experiences. I love not being able to plan anything more than 2 weeks out because it's new and interesting and it just kind of keeps things more fluid, I feel like.
Did you ever work a 9-to-5 job and say, I'm out of here, I hate this?
I mean, years ago, one of my first jobs was, actually I had a couple, I had an internship and I was working for a company doing graphic design, and then I got another job designing book covers, and so that was a full 40-hour a week job.
And you've done freelance work ever since?
And I've done freelance work ever since. The first 5 years were like design freelance, graphic design, and then I moved into photography.
So you studied design in college, and how did you make the transition into photography?
The transition to photography was from design work. I'd taken a couple of graphic design photography classes for the graphic design major that I took, and but that was just like minimal. Like it was very basic. And then a few years later, after I had started doing design, I was freelance graphic designing, and digital kind of came on the forefront, and it was prominent. The technology was enough to actually use in my graphic design work. So I bought a digital camera just for that, to create assets for my design work. And just kind of the more I was playing around with it, the more it kind of evolved. And I ended up convincing a nonprofit design client of mine to split the expenses on a trip to Africa to build them a photo library. I have no idea how I convinced them because I had never really done any of that before, but they took me up on it and I jumped in. I went to Africa for a month, four countries. And it was an eye-opening experience. And from there, kind of started looking into photography more and practicing. And here I am now.
Was it scary for you to make the transition from design to photography when you didn't have formal training in it?
Well, luckily, it was a little bit easier. I mean, there was a bit of a jump, yeah. But luckily, I have had enough design skills to kind of carry me, and I could keep doing graphic design projects and kind of have a flowing schedule to be able to, like, practice photography and play around. I connected with another photographer. This was all in Seattle, where I grew up. And he kind of invited me out and was helping me out, answering questions. And I kind of started shadowing him on some projects here and there and just practicing my own work in the meantime.
What do you think was the biggest challenge for you when you made that transition and went in it on your own?
The biggest challenge was probably having the patience to get to the level that I'm at now, where I'm shooting big ad campaigns and different things, and that journey takes years. And I'm the type of person that wants it yesterday. And it's not a fast track. There's no fast track. And you have to keep plugging away and keep plugging away until something connects and pops and hits the tipping point.
What were some of the things you did to develop your craft?
Constantly shooting all the time. you know, creating. And I still do that today. I still shoot stuff for myself all the time. And in the beginning, more than ever, because that's when you're learning. And that's the, it takes that a lot of practice to get your work to the point where it's commercially viable.
For sure. And as an artist, I think it's really easy to put all your heart and soul into everything and then maybe not get the outcome that you always want. And as an artist, when you are first starting out and you have a vision of what you want your work to be and then you see what it is, how do you move past that?
That's a great question. Going through that right now, actually. I've hit a certain level, but now there's another level that I see for myself. And I think a lot of it is just keeping on practicing and pushing through until you get there. And, you know, learning how to bring all those elements into your work.
You said that you grew up in Seattle. I just spent 4 years living on the West Coast, and I love it there. But I think that New York has a really special energy to it. How has moving here affected your career and your personal life?
I think it's just a higher level of influence. It's funny, I was just talking to a friend of mine this morning. He runs a beverage company, and he's thinking about moving to Seattle.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then, you know, but I think him having put in years of time here, building his business and being surrounded in a place like this, I think is epically huge, because you're playing at a different level. You're experiencing an industry at a different level, the top. I mean, New York is pretty much the top when it comes to photography. With digital and internet, it's kind of spread throughout the U.S. these days and the world, but I still think I meet and talk to people on a daily basis here in New York that constantly inspires me on a completely different level than I ever was in Seattle.
What advice would you give to young people who are afraid to make that move from home for the first time?
Jump off and do it. I mean, it's a lot easier said than done, but if you are resourceful and creative, you can figure out ways to make a living and create the opportunities that you want. And that's the great thing about New York, is there's opportunities everywhere. There's more opportunities here than any other place that I've lived or been to. And I think that's just the nature of like how many people are here and the level of industry. And I think people here who I've met are always open to helping you out.
And it seems like most people who live here are here with a purpose, and they really know what they want in life, which is nice to be exposed to that.
Yeah.
You work with so many different people, and I can imagine that you get to know people quite intimately through the process of photographing them. When you're on set, how do you create that ease and that connection with people so that you can create great art together?
I think a lot of it is just being open and being interested in other people. And sometimes, I mean, I've had 5 minutes with somebody, I've had, you know, a full day with somebody, and you kind of got to make the best of every situation. But I think just making people feel at ease with you through being interested, through kind of getting to know them is the easier, the better way to do it.
And you've shot for celebrities and nonprofits. And what's it like to work with so many different dynamics and types of people?
I actually love the dynamics of it. And some people, I think if people interest me, then it's even more fun to kind of get to know them. And, you know, that's a big reason I started my podcast, was because I can talk to somebody and ask them all these questions and dive into their world for an hour. And then we go out and we shoot. And that's a whole different connection.
Mm-hmm. Your pictures have so much soul and depth to them. And how do you capture that in a photograph?
I think it's a lot of the way that I see the world, and I look for that. I look for the joy in people. I look for positivity. I think that's a big part of my life, and seeing that light in other people.
Are there any philosophies or values that you try and incorporate into your work to capture that and bring that out in people?
I think a big part of it's just having fun and keeping things light. And you know, some people are darker than others, but for me, my point of view is I like to see that light side in people. And if you stick to that point of view, that's what's important. And that goes across everything that you do as an artist, is really like, what is your point of view of the world, and sticking to that.
Liveband.com is Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar. New shows are added daily by the city's most active promoters, musicians, and by the driving force of the music scene, the fans. Liveband.com's listings are different because they are integrated with profiles updated by bands and business owners as they promote upcoming events. Check out the archives to see how closely we've worked within the community to put on the shows you love. Visit livemusicvancouver.com for the latest independent and major label event listings. Liveband.com, Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar.
Welcome back to Question Everything on CITR Radio 101.9 FM in Vancouver. I'm your host, Carly Sotis, and today I'm speaking with photographer Nick Onken.
When you look at a photo, a viewer can only see so much, and I only know a little bit about photography, but what goes into the behind the scenes of a photo shoot? I can imagine there's all kinds of crazy things happening.
I mean, that all depends on the size of the photo shoot. I mean, I've done stuff where it's just me and a camera. A lot of my travel stuff is just me and a camera, three lenses, and running around, walking around, switching lenses with a little bag on my side. And I've done full productions where there's 40 people on set, and I have three assistants and a digital tech and a wardrobe stylist, their two assistants, prop stylist, their two assistants, hair and their assistant, makeup and their assistant, and then producers and clients. And, you know, that's a whole support team, and that's more about kind of dancing with the client and the art director, and then having your crew manage everything else and make sure that everything else is flowing, because the relationship with the client is what I'm there to manage and create with them.
You just got back from Guatemala shooting for Pencils of Promise. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us more about how you got involved with the organization and the impact that it's had on you?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably been one of the biggest things in my life over the last few years. And I met Adam Braun, the founder, probably seven years ago in 2009. Met through a mutual friend of ours, Reed, and I was just looking for a developing world charity to get involved with. I had no idea what Pencils of Promise would actually become, and I just wanted a way to give back and use my talent to give back, because I didn't necessarily always have the money to do that. And I feel that's a big part of life and being able to do a career like this, is to use your talents to give back. So Reed connected us. We had eventually had a beer together, Adam and I, and I just saw something in him. I saw that he had a bleeding heart for the cause and a business mind to actually build it, because I know that's what it takes to build something successful. And he was like, we clicked, and he was like, hey, I'm going to Laos in December. If you want to come, you're welcome to come. I can't pay you. Can't pay for you, but you're welcome to come. At this point, he had built one school. He had one more on the way, and I bought a ticket and flew out there and met up with him. We traveled for 6 days through the jungles and the rivers and built a whole library of images from that trip that catalyzed the visual branding of the organization. And, you know, Pencils of Promise is now known as a charity with like one of the best brands out there. And I mean, the impact that it's had on my life, you know, now there are over 350 schools in three countries across the world. And I've been to every school, or not every school, every country. And I photographed in every country and created even more images around that. And then, you know, being on the ground and seeing the work and seeing the impact that Pencils of Promise has had is hugely impactful for me, to the point where I started my own fundraiser campaign a couple of years ago and raised $25,000 to build my own school. And that school was just finished, you know, a few months ago. And it's an incredible feeling to actually see your name on a plaque and see a school that you built, and how much impact that's going to have on people. And I think it really, education is something that's important to me. You know, I'm into a lot of personal development and mental positivity, and that's all in the mind. And I think if you can give a child the opportunity and the tools to learn and to become a better human, the world's going to be a better place.
For sure. Yeah, education, Pencils of Promise, everything they've done is incredible. What was it like for you to build a school and to see it come to life? I know that when reflecting on things like that, you kind of look at the whole process and the whole trip, but was there a specific moment or something when you were just standing back and saying, wow?
Well, I still haven't seen the actual school physically. They've sent me photos of the school.
You didn't take them?
At some point, well, I wasn't in Ghana at the point that it was finished. So, you know, I think to raise $25,000 from crowdfunding, it takes a lot of time. It took me 2 years. And I got inspired after I went to, I think it was my second trip to Africa. I got back and I started a fundraiser and started donating my birthdays, and I would just send email blasts and posts on social media, and people were giving like $5, $10, $20, $50, $100, $200. And it's like, really, it takes a lot of work rallying people and getting behind a cause. And I don't know if you've read Adam's book, The Promise of a Pencil, but there's a chapter in there where he talks about asking, and it was one of the biggest issues, not issues, but problems that he had growing the business or growing the charity, was asking people for money, until he realized that he wasn't asking for himself. He was asking for the kids. He was asking for a cause. And that changed the way that he was able to ask. And I see that perspective, and I, even in my own fundraiser. So to come full foe, it was so much work, so many emails, so much rallying and enrolling people into donating to the school project, that when it was finally finished, there was the first finish of the fundraise, which was one level of excitement. Like, holy cow, I just raised $25,000 from so many different amazing people that were willing to give. And then 6 months later, to see a photo of the school and the plaque that they put on there, is a whole completely different feeling of fulfillment.
That's awesome that you were able to crowdfund and to rally so many people to get behind you. Is there any advice that you have for young people who are really passionate about something and want to raise funds for something but don't know exactly what to do or feel uncomfortable asking?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, just do it. In the words of Nike, just do it. And I mean, that's the biggest difference between people that do and people that don't, are people that actually do and make that choice to create and to jump off and do it. But I think the other thing is, you know, like we just talked about, it's not about asking for money for yourself. It's about asking for money for kids that need it. And, you know, there's photos and there's videos that communicate what that means. And I think that's where I've come into play for the last few years, is creating those communications and creating that connection between the donors and the people that are on the ground receiving this gift. And, you know, it's about rallying your friends. It's about the $5, the $10 donations, the $20 donations that people give, and keep pressing on, keep going. There's lulls in my campaign of raising that took a while to get to, you know, push through. But then it was like, okay, let's do another round. Let's do another round, and eventually finished it.
How do you think you are able to, I know it's easy to say just do it, but have you always had that mindset towards things?
I've always kind of been of that nature, especially being freelance my whole life. It just, the jobs working for other people were very temporary in terms of like being able to learn from them. And I don't think anything gets done unless you choose to create it. There's a book called The War of Art, and he talks about the resistance, the things that keep us from actually getting off the couch and doing and creating. And it's not just creating art, it's creating anything, because we all have distractions. I think there's a, you know, especially now with the digital world and social media, you can use it to your advantage, but you can also get lost in consuming for all your time, and you've gotten nowhere.
For sure. Is there anything that you do to stay focused or to set goals so that you're able to stay on the track that you want to be on?
Usually at the beginning of the year, I try to sit down and write goals out for the year. I think I'm in the process now of wanting to do an actual vision board of how I want things to look in my life. I do written to-do lists on a daily basis, because I love the idea of being able to cross things off the list. And also, it's sitting in front of me, in front of my desk. If it's on an app, then I forget about it. I'm so ADD. So I have to have this piece of paper sitting in front of me so that I'm like, oh yeah, I got to do that. Oh yeah, I got to do that. Constantly.
And we're sitting in your studio right now, and we're surrounded by inspirational quotes and things that I guess listeners can't see, but what inspires you to write those? Do you find them in certain places, or do they pop out of your head?
So I did a 100-day project on Instagram two or three years ago. We started it, and it was through Elle Luna. She's an artist. I had her on my podcast, and she's got a book called The Crossroads of Should and Must, about doing what you must do versus what your family and your life tell you you should do. We were all in a mastermind together, and she kind of brought up this idea of doing this 100-day project and doing one thing every day for 100 days. And I was trying to figure out what I could do for that project, you know, because my schedule is all over the place. I need something that I can do in 2 minutes or 2 hours. And I was starting to get interested in typography, and I decided to do that for my project. So I essentially picked a quote that resonated with me for that day. And those quotes come from conversations. They come from the internet. They come from other Instagram accounts that I just like. It was really about what I felt I needed for the day. And then doing the typography was a way to kind of embody that and to bring it to life. And then to share that with other people and inspire them, because I know a lot of people have been inspired by it.
For sure. How has some of the things that you learned through your design background impacted your photography and the quotes and things that you do now?
The design background shows up everywhere. It's in a little bit more of a creative director role, but you know, sometimes I can just sit down and slam out a deck like I'm working on now, and I know how to design it. But the design background has given me kind of the foresight to create an overall aesthetic that I'm interested in. And that translates from the art that you're seeing on the walls to my visual brand. You know, I hire designers to do that now because I don't have the time to do that. And I'd rather hire people that are now focused on that and can do that better than I can. But I have an overall idea and vision of what I like.
I think that design teaches you a certain way of thinking and seeing the world too that can be transferable everywhere.
Absolutely. I think that's part of what resonated with me a long time ago when I read Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Work Week, is the idea of designing the life that you want. You know, having a design background completely played into that, as you're talking about.
For a taste of the classics with a twist, join me, Marguerite, with Classical Chaos, Sunday mornings starting at 9, right here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, Canada.
You're listening to Question Everything on CITR Radio. I'm your host, Carly Sotis, and today I'm speaking with photographer Nick Onken about what it takes to succeed as a creative entrepreneur.
I'm wondering, you've done so many things, you're so established as a photographer, but looking back, what are some of the biggest failures or challenges that you faced?
Challenges, I guess failures and challenges kind of fall into the same category. A few years ago, when my career first took off, my photography career, it was booming and doing really well. And then a few years later, things slowed down. And that was a big, big challenge mentally, emotionally, because as an artist, you get attached to your work. You know, for me, it was a big part of my self-worth, who I was shooting for, what I was shooting. And when that kind of falls off the bandwagon a little bit, there's a lot of self-doubt that comes in. And luckily, a buddy of mine, Lewis Howes, introduced me to this emotional intelligence and leadership training called MITT out in LA. And it was an eye-opening experience and something I did for a couple of years. And it really helps you see your blind spots and take a step back into seeing the emotional downfalls and patterns that you can't see for yourself.
What were some of the things that it involved?
There's things that I can tell you, but it's an experiential process. So you kind of actually have to go through it because it's a process that pressure cooks your deep emotions and the way that you react to things. So everybody sees something different. I think the big outlying curriculum is that we all have limiting beliefs based off of our past experiences, whether, you know, if we've been hurt in the past or certain things have happened to us. And I think the biggest tangible thing that I can tell you is, you know, we can either see ourselves as a victim in life or we can create our lives. And that's one thing to become conscious of and separate yourself from. But there might be a lot of things in your subconscious that you can't even really recognize. And that's why I recommend going through a process like this, because it drives that up. And then when you're in that environment, you can actually put a label on it. You can understand that that is just an emotion that you're feeling and what those are, because it's different for everyone. Everyone's got a different story. And I think there's different ways of self-discovery. This is just one way that is a pressure cooker. They say that what you learn, what would take you 5 years to learn about yourself, you can learn in 5 days in something like this.
When you were in your 20s, were you aware of those things or always striving to be more self-aware? Or is that something that you only recently developed?
I've always been self-aware to a point, but nothing like now. You know, going through this process completely opened my eyes up to a different world. And I've always been observant of myself growing up and how I could improve. But I think this was probably the biggest move or catalyst in my life over the last few years.
How do you think it's impacted your photography?
I think photography-wise, it's opened my eyes a little bit more. I think the whole idea of positive thinking and all of that that you see in my art, the podcast, all of that had kind of stemmed through going through that course.
When you create art, what do you hope that people get when they look at it? Is there a specific thing that you're always striving for? Is it positivity, or does it really depend on the project?
I want people to feel youthfully optimistic. I think, you know, I mean, that's me. I'm like youthfully optimistic, I hope, for the most part. You know, we all go through our ups and downs, but I think overall I'm an optimistic person. And I think age is a number. And I think, you know, I'm probably older than I feel and act and interact with the world. And I think that's a great thing to have. I don't think life should be so serious all the time. I think life should be fun and youthful, and we should create those moments that we dream of all the time. My 30s is kind of where I feel good. You know, I feel like an adult kid. But going through, you know, the 20s, you just have to keep pressing through and learning as much about yourself as possible. I kind of, you know, I would have loved to do this course in my 20s because I learned so much about myself now. What would life have been like if I learned that earlier? But, you know, we all have the path that we're on.
Looking back on your career, what do you think the most important lesson that you've learned is that you wish you could share with your younger self?
Learn about yourself at a younger age and become more emotionally intelligent. I met the Dalai Lama last year. My friend did an event with him and he spoke for an hour. And I think the biggest takeaway that I took from that talk that he did was he said, like, somebody asked what he thinks the world needs more of. And he said, emotional hygiene. And he said, if everybody could take care of themselves on a higher emotional level and understand, the world would be a much better place. And to be able to do that on a daily basis and maintain a higher level of emotional intelligence, people would interact with other people in the world completely differently, and the world would become a better place.
For sure. I have one last question for you. Mm-hmm. What does the phrase live inspiration mean to you?
Live inspiration means to me to constantly become inspired, but also be inspiring to other people on a daily basis.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
If you'd like to learn more about Nick and his work, you can follow him on Instagram and Snapchat at Nick Onken, or visit his website at nickonken.com. Thank you for joining us on another episode of Question Everything. I'm your host, Carly Sotis, and each week we bring you inspiration and insights from creative minds and experts in entrepreneurship, publishing, and design. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can download the show at iTunes, SoundCloud, and at citr.ca. Thank you.